Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Food Friday, May 1st. I'm Ray Graff, ready to talk recipes and treats. Today is none other than Jennifer Clare, culinary instructor and founder of Home Cooking New York. You got a question about cooking? Maybe share a family recipe with us? Learn something that you can do at home with the 12 cans of Spam that you might have set aside for the lockdown? Give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Again, the number is 800-348-2551. Jennifer Clare is here. Your cooking calls will be coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today on this Food Friday, we offer some assistance to all those cooks at home. Here with tips and suggestions is Jennifer Clare. Jennifer Clare is usually on this program once a year, just once. It's around Thanksgiving. The fact that she's on here on the 1st of May tells you just how rotten this pandemic has gotten. She's got nothing to do. She said, you know what, I'll give Ray an hour here. And it's very nice. Jennifer is a culinary instructor and the founder of Home Cooking New York, a cooking school in New York City. She's the author of 6 Basic Cooking Techniques, Culinary Essentials for the Home Cook. Jennifer is a former food editor at Martha Stewart Living, former recipes editor at the Wall Street Journal, one of our favorite guests. Great to have her here. Jennifer also has a cooking podcast, Kitchen Radio. The number to call is 800-348-2551 if you want to weigh in today. 800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Jennifer Clare, what brings you here?
Well, probably the same thing that brings everybody anywhere these days, you know, trying to find a diversity of activities now that I'm stuck at home. And yes, I'm in Beacon, so usually coming up to spend time with you in November is a 3-hour round trip in the car. And this yeah. was no gas at all. Just picked up the phone. It was pretty excellent.
It's so outstanding to have you here. How have you been handling it? How's the health of everybody at home?
Everybody is fine. We have not gotten sick. Good. So we're sick of being home, but we are we're laying low just like everybody else. I must say for my, you know, what I do for a living, teaching people how to cook in their, you know, cook home cooked foods. It's a boon because everybody is home now. So nobody can say, oh, I don't have any time to cook. I'm so busy. Now everyone's got all the time in the world to spend time in their kitchen. So I've been busy, you know, learning Zoom and setting up tripods and teaching cooking classes to really anybody. You know, I used to, my cooking school temporarily shut, of course.
Yeah.
Was just for New York City residents. But now because we're online, you know, our students can be from Colorado or Georgia or Albany. And so it's been kind of fun having cooking classes where, you know, 10 people show up and I teach them how to cook vegetarian Indian food or brunch or dumplings, and everybody's at home and everyone's all over the country and everybody's going through the exact same thing.
Yeah, but here's the problem. Here's the problem with that. Okay.
Yeah.
And I can see that it would be really great on a number of levels. But if you're teaching somebody like me, say I go to, what is your website, by the way?
HomeCookingNY.com.
All right. Say I go and I sign up for a class. Now it's well known in almost everywhere that I can't cook, and I take one of your classes, whatever, and you can't taste it. So I could do my usual terrible job and then pretend it was delicious and say, Jennifer, I nailed this.
Yeah, but see, you're a defeatist. That's ridiculous. The whole point is to keep trying. So we cook things that are very doable. Seasoning is, of course, you know, to taste, but yeah. I talk people through things. We go through it together. And I love it because I do feel like, you know, there are a lot of people out there like you who don't feel like they are a good home cook. But if you are being guided along, I think you might be surprised what you could come up with. You know, I don't sort of let people just go off on their own. We do a very considerate job of like cooking everything together and seasoning it along with each other. And it is hard because we're used to, you know, all cooking together, all the smells are the same. So it's not as satisfying online, but it's what we've got. And
can I just tell you, you're not the first person to call me a ridiculous defeatist, by the way. Not even on this show. Our number here, by the way, is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. If you have a cooking question for Jennifer Clare, founder of Home Cooking New York, and that's homecookingny.com, right? Yeah, is that right?
Did we lose? Okay,
good.
Sorry.
That's all right. You know, people usually...
It's hard not, like, because I'm used to sitting across from you and, you know, having eye contact and... us having our little repartee.
I know. You know what? Most people really appreciate not seeing me. This email came in from, one of our own, Dave Lucas, who is on, he's out in the field reporting, but he's not coming into the station. And Dave writes, I wanted to make a type of bread. The recipe calls for yeast. Yeast, it seems, has gone the way of paper products, not on the shelves. Is there any way to compensate or substitute, or can you somehow capture your own yeast at home?
You definitely can. But the thing that you can make a sourdough starter, but there's two obstacles. One is it takes about 2 weeks. You basically take flour and water and set it out, mix it together until it makes kind of a paste, and you let it sit out on your counter. And yes, it will capture all the wild yeast in the air and start to slowly ferment, and then you keep feeding it with more flour and water every day. But it does take a couple of weeks for you to build up this sourdough base. The best thing to do is, if you are someone who has a social media account, is put out an APB for sourdough starter, because I did the same thing and got some from a friend who lives up the street. He left me a little glass jar at the end of his driveway. I did all that socially distant thing, and I got it. But the issue is, along with yeast being sort of sparse, is flour. I think it's sort of coming back, but in the beginning days of all of this, people were buying up every, you know, grain of flour there was.
Yeah.
So in order to make your own sourdough starter, you do need a lot of flour, because you have to keep feeding it. So the best thing, and many, many people have sourdough starter, and it's the kind of thing that you can share with abandon, because you have to keep feeding it anyways.
Yeah.
And so you always have stuff to share. So definitely sourdough, that's how I've been cooking most stuff, because we ran out of yeast 3 weeks ago.
but we've
been doing a lot of quick breads.
I've been told, and of course I've never made bread, and nor ever will I, but that sourdough requires some level of skill and experience.
Nope. Sourdough, if you have sourdough starter, it is a living thing. So the only thing that maybe is a little different is that you have to feed it every day that you want to use it. If you don't want to make sourdough bread or waffles or pancakes that day, you can just keep the jar of sourdough starter, which is just flour and water, in your fridge. It stays dormant. But if you do want to wake it up in order to use it, you have to activate it. So it requires remembering, like, the night before to feed it with some flour. But it's no different than making a regular yeast bread. Instead of using, you know, sprinkling dry yeast in your, you know, flour, you're adding, you know, usually a half a cup of this goo, sourdough starter. And I feel like, so my Instagram accounts are filled with people's homemade sourdough breads. First it was banana bread. Everybody was making banana bread, and now everybody's moved on to sourdough because there's so little yeast left. I don't know where all this yeast went. It's in people's basements.
Yeah, I think it's probably in preppers' houses in their basements. You know, well, it'll come back.
It will.
You know, I got to be honest with you, and I know you're a food person, and you probably love this. I'm getting a little sick and tired of seeing pictures of everybody's bread on social media.
Yeah. I'm getting a little sick of my own cooking. So I love to cook at home. This is, again, I'm a home cook. I teach people how to cook. This should be like prime time for me. But after cooking three meals a day, and all my food, I'm the cook here, so all the food tastes like my food. I am really realizing how much I need the diversity of, like, eating out or having a lunch out somewhere, or, you know, going out for, you know, Thai food or dumplings somewhere else. So the food is not of my own hands.
So nobody else in your house cooks?
They do, but they're all using the ingredients even in our, you know, in the house. So we are only shopping at one or two grocery stores right now in town. And so they only have a certain, you know, number of items, you know, that we buy. It's more like at this point, like, I have tried to cook everything. We've had paella. We've had Persian food. We've had Indian food. Tamales. Like, you know, I was getting very creative because I had all this time on my hands. And now I've hit a wall. I know I'll come back, but it's. This week I was just, you know, craving somebody else's food. Although luckily in our town and almost everybody's town, it's still important to support the people who are still open for takeout, like the restaurants. And
absolutely.
They have this wonderful place called Lodger in Newburgh, New York, and they have been making these pot pies. So they do like beef and Guinness, or they do asparagus and cheddar, and they make this medjool date bread. Anyways, they've been, you know, or you can order ahead these pot pies for a family of four.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go pick up one tomorrow, and I'm so excited to see eat someone else's food.
All right, you have 1 minute here. We have to take a break in 1 minute. But now I must tell you this. Because I am very old school, before the lockdown started, I went and bought 27 cans of Spam, and they're in the back room. And we haven't had any yet, including teriyaki Spam, which is a new thing. You now have 45 seconds to give me a good Spam recipe, because I haven't dared open it, fearing an insurrection in the house.
Well, I would be afraid of that, too. I don't like Spam. But, I mean, the best thing to do to Spam is, because it's got sugar in it, so you should grill it, like cut it into thick slices and grill it with some pineapple. That would be the best thing to do with
All
spam.
Right. You know, Jennifer Claire, this is why you're here, to help me with my Spam issues.
Can't believe I just gave a Spam recommendation.
We'll be right back on a Food Friday, 800-348-2551. We'll get back to the calls and more stuff coming up. It's Vox Pop Food Friday. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We're lucky to have Jennifer Claire here today and sharing tips for things you can do to cook at home. And you've been shopping at the same store. Have you been keeping the larders full, or are you just using up what you have?
Well, in the beginning, just like everybody else, I got all panicky and, you know, wanted to make sure we had enough food in case the food supply all of a sudden shut down. Nobody knew. This was like early March.
Yeah.
And so like every time I went shopping, I was buying just like a little bit of extra of everything.
Yep.
So I had sort of a pantry in my husband's office where we had the pasta and the canned tomatoes and the beans and bags of rice. And then as things, you know, went along and I realized it wasn't so difficult to get food, and there are less variety of foods. And now I hear that there might be a shortage of meat, but none of these things kind of, they don't upset me, because I must say part of me enjoys the challenge of this kind of cooking. If I go to the supermarket and there isn't string beans, I'm going to buy snow peas. If there isn't any meat, I'm going to buy, you know, chickpeas or tofu, or I don't know. I don't get too upset. I wish people didn't get so upset, because that's why they bought all the stuff off the shelves. And no, most people aren't using that stuff.
You're right.
But I do think it's funny. I don't know if that Spam question was a joke or if it was real.
Do you know me to joke?
I do know that. It's not a joke, or it is?
No, of course it's serious. Oh. Dead serious.
But I'm saying what people chose around mid-March to stock up on is very telling. So the ingredients that I stocked up on that I was deeply afraid I'd run out of was mostly fat. So I bought 10 pounds of butter and had them in my freezer, and I bought I have a cooking school, so I got a big wholesale order of olive oil sent to me. And chocolate, so chocolate chips, because I knew we'd be doing a lot of baking. So chocolate and butter was like high on my list. Toilet paper never even dawned on me. And now, unfortunately, we're stuck with all that crappy toilet paper that they've been selling. At least where I live, you know, none of the good stuff. There's no Charmin or, you know, the nice stuff.
Yeah.
Now there's the kind of hospital grade sandpaper, toilet paper, plenty of it, but
well, that's good.
You know what?
In some places there aren't a huge stock of anything. So that's good. Now I want to say, and before we go to the calls, and we're going to do that right now, 800-348-2551, Jennifer Claire, right now on the air in front of everyone, I will say that if there is a meat shortage, I got Spam, $15 a can. Just let me know. All right. Shoot me an email. Let's go to Charles in Fishkill. Charles, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm in my kitchen right now. I'm caramelizing onions and shallots for making pesto. I have an unusual problem, is I'm allergic to garlic. So I do my pesto with caramelized onions and shallots.
Oh, interesting.
And today I'm making parsley pesto, which is really easy. You don't have to cook the parsley at all. I just cut the leaves off all the stems. That's the icky, boring prep part. And I put it in a food processor with the caramelized onions and olive oil. And I do I toast my own cashews and almonds. And it turns out really great. It's one of my favorites. I was wondering if you had any experience with unusual pestos other than the normal basil.
Yes, I think that's a great idea. I do a parsley pesto is similar to what they call the chimichurri sauce. Chimichurri is usually a part cilantro, like half cilantro and half pesto. If you like cilantro, that's a great way to jazz it up. I also like to put salty things in my pestos, my herb sauces. So I usually do like a tablespoon or two of capers or a couple anchovies. And both of those would be good in the pesto you're making with the caramelized onions, just to give it a little bit more of a, you know, savory, you know, vinegary brine. Lemon juice is also really good in those herb pestos. I don't love cooked things like pesto.
I do sometimes add lemon at the end.
Yeah. So I know you did caramelized onions, and that kind of sweetens it up. I prefer my pestos to be 100% fresh, like sort of that bright flavor. So instead of, if you are allergic to garlic, you might want to try, instead of doing caramelized onions, putting in a chopped up raw scallion, because that gives you that kind of bright peppery flavor. It's not as strong as onion, but it's got kind of the brightness of garlic without, you know, if you're having no allergic response.
Yeah.
So that's what I would recommend those add-ins.
All right,
Charles, thanks a lot for the call. I got to tell you, I kind of like the idea of pesto with caramelized onions. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah. No, I do too. I had never done raw and cooked food in a pesto, but hey, that's what this time is for, experimenting in the kitchen.
Jennifer Clare is our guest here on Food Friday. The number is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Paladin wrote us, said, Ray, if you want a good Spam recipe, BLT, but Spam instead of the bacon, and don't forget the mayo. You see,
yeah.
Jennifer? This is the sort of information that we can give on a food. Let's go, Charlie in Lake Katrine, you're on.
Hello. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Yeah. A couple quick questions. My stove broke for about a year, and I just had one burner on top that I used for boiling. And so I went out and I got a GE toaster oven. And I wound up using that, like, for all my, you know, baking needs. You know, I became an empty nester. I didn't need much time in the kitchen. And I could, you know, roast up a 4 or 5 pound chicken in it. And then I finally got the stove replaced, and I find I'm not using any oven at all. You know, like, it's just more convenient to use the toaster oven. I was wondering what your, you know, your ideas are about, I guess, oven, stove versus toaster oven prepared food. And the other thing is, another one of my favorites is carrot juice. And my son gave me a Proctor Silex juice extractor about a year ago, and I got into juicing carrots. I just do mostly carrots. I buy like 1 pound bags of the little carrots that are already processed, and I do a couple bags of those, and that gives me a couple nice glasses of juice and no pulp. And then I got into a dialogue with a cousin of mine out at Kent State, and she got a food processor, and she was telling me about recipes for carrot juice with that, where the pulp is included and you dilute it. I was just wondering what your take was.
Well, they're two totally different machines. I mean, one is literally just 100% juice, and you're left with all this flavorless pulp from the juice extractor, and one is just going to chop it up.
Yeah.
So I think you're best, you know, sticking with the juice.
I drink the juice. I mean, I throw the pulp away.
Ah.
Well, the pulp doesn't have any flavor left. The only thing I've known that people do with the pulp is to make carrot cake.
No.
So you can do that.
Yeah, well,
and then
I'm not
going to
make
oven
a carrot
thing.
Cake in my toaster oven.
Yeah, you could. And the toaster oven, if it works for you, then don't worry about it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just not as efficient. It's never going to retain the kind of heat that an oven can do because of the thick walls of the oven versus the toaster. But if it's cooking, if you can literally make a chicken, you must have a giant toaster oven if you can fit a 4 pound chicken in there. So,
no,
if it worked.
No problem.
Great.
2 hours. You've got to cook it a little longer because it doesn't retain the heat. You're right.
Well, right. So, it only should take an hour in an oven. So, it's basically twice as long.
Right.
So, I'd say it's inefficient and probably not your best bet for roasting a chicken, but if you want to, you know, like make a, you know, milk cheese.
Well,
milk
it has a timer on
like
it,
that.
You know, so I can walk away and do other things. If I forget about it, it shuts off.
Right.
My old stove had it, you know, the oven had a timer on it with a shut off, and then it dropped to 177 degrees for 20 minutes. But this new one that got replaced is there's no shut off timer.
Oh,
so
boy.
I don't want to take a chance on forgetting about something.
Right. Burn the house down. Right.
I'm old.
That's a good plan. Charlie, hey, thanks a lot for the call. By the way, Jennifer Claire, can you make a carrot cake in an easy bake oven?
I've never tried.
All right. Maybe next show.
Well, you can only cook things like, isn't that with a light bulb?
Yes, indeed.
And yes.
Got one for the kids once and burned myself.
I remember
well.
Those.
Ah,
yeah.
The good old days when all the toys are dangerous.
Good old days,
hey,
right?
Betty in Kerhonkson. Betty, you're on. Hey, Betty, you want to turn that radio down? I sound terrific, but I don't need to hear myself again. So if just, Betty, are you there? Oh, Betty. Oh.
Yes, I am.
Can you turn the radio down just a little bit? Okay, thank you very much.
Light bulb.
Oh, no, okay. We still hear it. Okay, there we go. You're on now.
Great. Great.
Great.
Well, I have a question.
Sure.
And I'm wondering how to make the very thin, peppery bread that you get at an Indian restaurant. It might be called naan.
It's called papadam. Oh, you mean the crispy, like a potato chip, or a chewy bread?
Like naan bread, right?
Yes, the really, really crispy.
It's called papadam.
Yeah.
You have to buy that. It's like something you buy. It's like a cracker and you fry it and it sort of pops up. That's a really spicy, peppery one.
I
guess you could make it, but I've never tried, so I don't know. It's paper thin, so hard to get that thin.
Hmm.
But you could make naan bread. Yeah, you could make Indian breads, more the soft, pillowy ones.
I love that. What's a good recipe for naan?
Require yeast.
Oh, it requires yeast?
I really want the peppery, fine, thin bread. I don't want bread. I have shopped in 5 weeks. I'm just using what I have.
Do you want to do some online shopping? One of the stores that I miss most in New York City.
I don't want to shop at all.
Okay.
You're going to have to just expand what you want to do. That one's a tough one. I don't know how to tell you how to make that, frankly.
Betty, can I interest you in a can of spam?
No, thanks.
All right,
you can't.
All right, thank you very much for the call. 800-348-2551. Jennifer Claire is our guest. By the way, Pierre in Westerlo wrote in, speaking of yeast, and Pierre wrote, I found a bottle of bread machine yeast in my refrigerator. It's unopened, may have been there for a year. Can I still use it?
Doesn't matter. Yeah.
No?
It's fine. Yeast lasts forever, especially if you refrigerate it. The best you have to do what's called proofing the yeast. So just take a pinch of the yeast, sprinkle it over some warm water, and put a couple, you know, sprinkles of sugar in there.
Yeah.
And if it foams, it means the yeast is active.
Okay.
If it doesn't do anything, then you know it's dead. But it's so hard to find dead yeast, I'll tell you, especially the freeze-dried stuff.
Interesting.
So he's probably all right.
Our guest today, Jennifer Claire. And how's the podcast going, Kitchen Radio?
You know what? It's going great. I'll tell you, way more people listen to it in the last 6 weeks than they ever have because I guess everybody's home doing some stuff. I have not found my motivation to do... I haven't done any new, I have 20, you know, old episodes, but I haven't done any new ones since we've been in lockdown, mostly because I'm in lockdown with a family of four in this house, and it's very hard to find any place that's quiet. And part of that was going into people's homes and them teaching me how to cook something. So maybe I'll get back on the bandwagon, but they're fun because they're little mini cooking classes that people can listen to. We have a bagel one, shrimp and grits, Persian food, Indian food. So it's good ear candy for these times.
But I mean, you're now focusing more on the live video Zoom classes,
right? So they're not video classes; they're live interactive cooking classes.
Right,
so
but
we've
it's
been
on
offering
video,
about
right?
yeah,
yeah.
They're on video, so I'm on Zoom. I have two cameras where you can see my face, and you can also see my cutting board, so I can show you how to make dumplings. And we've been doing Persian food, Indian food, bagel making, crepes, Thai. Mostly with an eye on short shopping lists, because when people register for the class, they have the option to cook along or take notes. Most people want to cook along, so they get the ingredient list ahead of time. I make sure that the menus are very succinct, so people are only buying, you know, 5 or 6 ingredients. Also well ahead, because everyone's shopping, you know, about once a week or less, which is not how most people used to shop.
Yeah.
So we make sure that the classes are very doable with, you know, with what people have in their pantry. And it's a great way to connect. People are alone in their homes. Many people don't have families. And so it's nice to connect with other people in their kitchens and say hello. It's very social. And then you get dinner at the end of it.
Very
so
cool.
It's been, yeah, I've been grateful for something to do.
Jennifer Clare is our guest. And the number is 800-348-2551. Let's jump over to Kanan. And John, you're on.
Thanks very much, Ray. I don't want a can of Spam.
Oh, come on.
I'm sorry.
Me neither.
I'm not a candidate for that.
All right. Fair enough.
But I would like a little advice about something that I'm going to do tonight. A day or so ago, I bought 3 chorizo sausages at a fancy gourmet store in Massachusetts. I don't know very much about chorizo sausages. I've never cooked them. And I'm looking for an interesting dinner to make for my family tonight. Do you have any thoughts?
Sure, you can do kind of like a mock paella. So is it a cooked chorizo or raw?
No, it's raw.
It's raw. So chorizo it's a pork sausage that has a lot of pepper and paprika in it. So
yep.
It's usually kind of a reddish color, and it's spicy. So it's primarily used in sort of Spanish cooking or Mexican cooking. So you can make tacos with it.
Right.
So, you know, you can sort of take it out of its casing and stir fry it with some peppers or onions or black beans and put that in a tortilla. Or you can make paella. So paella is just, you know, basically any kind of rice that you've got. I would saute onions and garlic and the chorizo until it's sort of partially cooked. Add the rice, raw rice, and then some chicken broth and maybe some canned tomatoes if you've got it. Some saffron or smoked paprika and cook that until it all cooks, you know, together. I mean, unless you have seafood, that's great. People put mussels in it too, but you could just do a chorizo paella. So good.
Well, in fact, how about shrimp? Would you mix in some shrimp?
Yeah,
with
chorizo and shrimp together. Yes. So you just throw all the chorizo and with the rice, and once the rice absorbs all the liquid, great. I would actually, I don't like cooking shrimp with other things because shrimp cooks so quickly. So I would saute some shrimp in olive oil and garlic on the side until they're just, you know, lightly curled, and then stir in the cooked shrimp into the chorizo paella at the end. So everything's cooked right.
Perfect. Thank you so much. I've got dinner all together.
All right, John.
Yay!
Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. If you have a cooking question for Jennifer Clare, let's go to Regina in Del Mar. Regina.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question about dried versus fresh herbs. So if I have a recipe that calls for, say, parsley, and I don't have fresh parsley, I just ignore it. I don't have dried parsley in my kitchen because I don't think it's any good. But
yeah, I agree.
It is. So my question is about cilantro. I have the same rule for cilantro. If I don't have it, I don't use dried, but a friend of mine likes dried. So I wondered what your thoughts are on dried cilantro as something worthwhile to have in your pantry.
Hmm.
No.
So there's 2 kinds of herbs out there. One is great dried and one is terrible dried. The one that is terrible dried are leafy herbs, leaves like tarragon, cilantro, parsley, basil, and dill. They all make terrible dried herbs because the whole point of those herbs is the freshness. But then there are the woody herbs, things like rosemary and thyme. Those make great dried herbs. Oregano is great dried. Mm-hmm. So if it calls for one of those heartier herbs, then the dried version is fine. But honestly, I agree with you. I don't. If it calls for fresh herbs, putting dried, desiccated dust in my food is just going to make it less delicious.
Well, that sounds really appetizing. Thank you for that.
Okay. I guess
something
I'm going to stay with my rule.
All right.
Thanks
for
reinforcing my thoughts.
Thanks, Regina.
You're welcome.
But wait now, you know, it's not the worst thing. It rehydrates when you put it in the sauce or whatever, right? The
yeah, but it's got no flavor, and it's just like the wrong flavor. The only reason to use fresh herbs is for a fresh flavor. So why? I mean, there's only dried herbs because it's they can stick around for a long time. Yeah. But I'll tell you, most people's herbs and spices, dried herbs and spices, have a shelf life of about 1 to 2 years. And like I would say with like 100% accuracy that everybody has some herb or dried herb or spice in their pantry that is well over 2 years old.
Oh, I'll bet you 10 years, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So if you take off the lid of your dried herb or spice and it smells like that ingredient, great, use it. But most of the time, it doesn't have any aroma whatsoever, so why would you put that in your food?
All right, well, we have to take a break. You were the former food editor at Martha Stewart Living, right?
A food editor, yes.
Yes. Okay, so let me ask you a question. Do you think Martha Stewart ever ate Spam?
I bet she tried it. You know, she's not...
Like in prison?
She's not as snooty and highbrow as everybody thinks, you know. But I'm sure she ate it once. I've eaten it once, and that was enough. I tried it, and I've moved on.
I'm going to convert you. The number is 800-348-2551. Jennifer Clare is here. It's a Food Friday. 1-800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Jennifer Clare is here. I almost called her Jennifer Spam. We've been talking about Spam so much. Jennifer Clare is here, and she is from Home Cooking New York, which is now exclusively online, at least until the lockdown ends. But it's going so fabulously well. I mean, maybe you stay home with the family and do it from home, right?
I think I'm going to keep an online virtual cooking school up and running for, you know, concurrently when we ever open up. Although we're in New York City, so I don't know when we would ever be able to open up. How do you socially distance and cook with people? So for now, I'm totally embracing the virtual cooking school because it allows everybody to join. I kind of love that people register, you know, for themselves, and then they invite their aunt and their uncle, their friends all over the country, and everybody joins together, you know, in the same class from all over the country, which has never been possible before. So there are silver linings to everything.
Right. As a business model, the overhead is less, and you could make a lot more money. But, I mean, I know I've been called at times a ridiculous defeatist, but I think eventually things will open up again. It may take a while, but I think we'll get back to a certain sense of normalcy. So, you know, let's be
optimistic. Until then?
Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I said until then. Yes, I'm an optimistic person in general, but I'm also, you know, practical. So I've been doing everything I can just to, I mean, I feel my business, unlike everybody's business, is transferable online. It may not be the same, but I can still teach online. Whereas if you own a restaurant, it's very difficult to know what your future is going to look like.
And that's why it's important to get out there and try to do some takeout and some curbside pickup in some of these places. This email came in from Addie Farm in Dalton, Massachusetts, and says, we love making pesto with our wild leeks that we find during May in our forest.
Mm.
Do you ever do any foraging? You don't, do you?
It's funny, foraging. I mean, I live in town, so I have a backyard, but there's nothing to forage. So people who do forage, there's not a lot out there, so people don't tend to give up the location of their morels or their ramps or their chanterelles. So I know they're around here, but I have not, no one's told me where I can go because, you know, there's not that much. And if everybody knows where the spots are, then they go get everything. I do eat wine berries in the summertime. That's my foraging berry that you can find where I am in the Hudson Valley.
What is that?
Like tiny, glassy raspberries. They're not kind of furry. They're beautiful,
really?
And they're sort of sweet and sour, a little like a pomegranate.
Well, I'll be darned. All right, this one is from Mark. Mark writes in, because of the coronavirus pandemic, I'm cooking at home now more than I ever have in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I've always thought of myself as a good cook, but now I'm starting to realize that everything I like to make is very high in salt. My blood pressure is beginning to reflect this. It seems like all the foods that stretch, like canned foods, pasta, processed foods, extremely high in sodium. Do you have any cooking recommendations so that we don't kill ourselves from high blood pressure while we try to shelter in place? Great letter from Mark.
Right. So, well, here's what I have to say about that. Processed foods are high in salt, but if you're cooking at home and you're using all just fresh foods, then you aren't going to have that trouble. So pasta doesn't have, you know, salt in it. I mean, mostly, it's mostly just flour and water, maybe a tiny bit of salt. Like grains don't have salt, vegetables don't have salt, meat doesn't have salt. When you do buy like jars of ragu or cans of, you know, cans of soup, that's where the salt creeps in. But cooking at home is the best way to avoid having a high sodium diet, because everything is at your own hand. You add the salt, because nothing comes naturally with salt. But it is, if you are buying, you know, pre-made foods like chicken broth, you can always buy unsalted chicken broth or low sodium canned beans or cans of tomatoes. But those things inherently don't have salt in them. So if he's reading cans that have a high sodium content, it's because it's processed food. So keep that on the shelves and cook from scratch. And then you can put as much or as little salt as you want in it. And that would be a great way to monitor your salt intake.
But that's a great letter. I mean, you know, I could see that people get high blood pressure from cooking at home. And if they're cooking
too much salt. They get high blood pressure from eating processed foods, pre-made foods, and eating out.
No.
Eating at home is the only safe place, because you are the only person adding salt to the food or not adding salt.
I think you're missing
a
point. You're missing a point. Really, the reason our blood pressure is going up from being at home is because we're stuck with the family. And eventually, we'll be have some free time. Agnes in Highland.
Go for a walk.
Yeah,
right. That would be good. Get some exercise.
6 feet from people. Agnes, you're on.
Oh, hello. Yes, I've been watching Michael Simon's cooking dinners for the past 40 nights. And a couple things he said was dry herbs. You know, because we're in a pinch with this whole situation. If you put them into a pan with, like, the hot oil, it releases some of the flavor better if you can't get the, you know, fresh stuff. So, you know, it's not ideal, but it's a way to use those herbs and keep smaller bottles, you know, don't keep them forever. But, you know, there is some flavor. It's not the same.
Right. That's called blooming, and that's true. It's not great for green leafy herbs that are dried, because they don't like to be subjected to heat, but for spices, any dried spices that you bloom in hot oil or hot butter before you add the rest of your food is totally true. That's a great way of waking up the flavors in spices. But spices, aromas are oil-based, and herbs are water-based. So water-based aromas are actually not really activated by heat. They're destroyed, whereas spices are activated by heat.
That's what he was saying. He said if you have the fresh ones to put them in at the end, then that would work. But it's been great. His shows have been great. If anyone's looking for more information on, you know, basic ideas of cooking.
Well, thank you, Agnes. We appreciate the call. Now, this is getting back to your point about the leafy herbs being destroyed by heat. But if I put oregano in my sauce, if I'm doctoring up a jar of sauce, which is about all I can do, you still get the oregano taste.
You do. And actually, I would say oregano is one of those green herbs that is one of the green herbs that actually I think is better dried. The flavor is more intense. People love dried oregano, but that would be the only green dried herb that I would give my thumbs up for.
Jennifer Clare is our guest from Home Cooking New York, and let's go to Mick in Bern. Mick, you're up.
Actually, it's Nick, but that's okay.
Oh, hi, Nick. Okay, you're on.
So I used to have my I'm a retired, quote-unquote, chef, and I used to have a little bakery cafe, and I want to get back to the sourdough thing that you guys were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I used to have a friend that would bring me his spent grain from when he brewed beer. And I used to bake that into a Finnish style sourdough rye. That was absolutely amazing.
Mm.
And I don't know.
And that had leavening properties, or that was just the flour?
No, it didn't have any leavening properties. It was really just more for the kind of a toothy bite. Gave it a little crunch. But anyway, and the other thing that I wanted to comment on was you had another caller earlier who was talking about his parsley pesto, and I used to make also chimichurri with smoked jalapenos, and thought that might be a good idea for him to add into his, if he has a smoker.
For the chipotle peppers?
No, I used to smoke them myself, so it wasn't like a smoked jalapeno in adobo sauce. It was more like I had a smoker that I used to put on my, it wasn't an actual smoker. I had a hotel pan that I put on my stove and smoked things in that.
Sounds good.
What's a hotel pan, Nick?
Like a
restaurant-y thing.
Okay.
It's like a big baking dish, made out of stainless steel.
Gotcha. All right. Well, Nick, thanks a lot for the call. By the way, Jennifer, not to belabor this point about spam.
Are you going back to spam?
We got an email from Charles here over at Aunt Karen's Farm. And Charles writes, I've been a long time since I've had it. It's been a long time. But a Hawaiian friend of mine's favorite sushi was Spam Sushi. I highly recommend it. You see?
All right.
Listen,
I don't know what I see, but
next time
that's for you to try, not me.
Okay, listen, next time you're on the show, you bring a turkey, it's stuffed with Spam, and we'll see what happens, all right?
Okay.
Nancy in Poughkeepsie. Nancy, you're on.
Yes, hi. So about a week or so ago, my smoothie maker, it was actually a bullet, just stopped working, and I think it's because By accident, I got some liquid into the base of the machine the last time I had used it before. So that's gone. And then before that, my trusty Cuisinart that I had had for many years also broke. So I'm looking to buy one appliance.
Hmm.
And I would love some advice on what would be, if I would go for something good, because I'd want something multi-purpose. So I'm thinking.
Unfortunately, there's no multi-purpose blender. Your NutriBullet is your blender, and your food processor is your food processor. But they do totally different things. One's for liquids, like one's for pureeing things that have a kind of a liquidy base, like a smoothie or anything. And then food processors are for dry materials. You know, they grind things up, but they don't make them, you know, they don't liquefy them. So there is no one appliance, unfortunately, that will cover both of those.
So they're really not interchangeable is what you're saying. Like, I really do need two things. So
there are two different machines,
Okay. So are
one's
you
for liquids and one's for dry ingredients.
Okay, I understand. I was wondering if maybe there was some hybrid of something that I didn't know about.
No, I mean, there's a Vitamix, but that is very expensive, and it still does not do a very good job of the Cuisinart, like... It gets everything gets stuck in the blades on the bottom. So yeah, that is that's the truth about those machines.
Do you have any favorite blenders or smoothie makers? I don't know how you know if you feel okay about endorsing brands, you know, in the show.
I feel good about doing anything that I stand by. I mean, I do have a Vitamix, so but that is not an inexpensive thing. It's like $250, so I don't necessarily recommend that. But you know, KitchenAid is another blender that I've had in the past that I like. And then, you know, Cuisinart to me is the ultimate brand for all food processors. You can get different off brands, but they're the ones that last.
Okay, good. You answered an email question we had from Tina, who was looking into buying either a high-speed blender or a food processor, and a reasonably priced brand would be?
I don't know, reasonably priced. A food processor is probably going to be like, you know, a little under $200 for... Yeah. The big machine. You can get smaller ones, but Cuisinart is the brand to go to. I don't think that there's a better brand out there. And then for blenders, the only one I can... Osterizer, is that one? I can't remember. And then KitchenAid. Those are the two I've had. I like KitchenAid because they come in all of those beautiful enamel colors that the KitchenAid mixers come in. So you can choose red or blue or purple or... You know, so I like color in my kitchen. So
this email came in from Jude in Woodstock and says, Jennifer mentioned somewhere in Newburgh she ordered some wonderful pies and other stuff. Where was it?
Lodger. So Lodger is only on Instagram. It's one of these kind of underground speakeasy style supper clubs.
Oh,
and before COVID, they used to have these weekly dinners. And so it's a set price. It was so reasonable. It was like maybe $40 for a 3-course meal. You bring your own wine, you get a ticket and you come and there's a set menu. You don't get to order. You just get to come in and sit at these long communal tables. It's called Lodger Newburgh. So you'd have to go to Instagram and look up that. And that's how you order their pies.
And as a PS, Jude in Woodstock writes, we were grateful for Spam once upon a time, just after World War II in the UK anyway, when there was rationing first years of my life. Jude's right, and I remember it from when I was a kid. You know, my mother used to get the stuff, and I got.
What do you think the Spam is going to be of COVID? You know, this is a similar. You know, we may run into some. Well, obviously, rationing of toilet paper.
Right.
Maybe toilet paper is our Spam.
The new Spam. All right, we'll have to work on that. I'll give that some thought. This one's from Paul in Altamont. Paul writes, "I've had some success in preserving with pureeing some herbs and oil, then freezing in small cubes like an ice cube." It works for some fresh herbs like parsley and cilantro and can work for some recipes. I puree to make a thick, oily paste using regular olive oil. and make a paste of sorts. It's not quite a pesto, of course, though it does work. And that's from Paul in Altamont.
Yeah, I agree. And then you can stir it in at the end to keep it fresh. Often what I just taught this class a couple days ago, I taught a class on Persian cooking, the foods of Iran. Yeah. And I always say, if you are somebody who always has leftover herbs or doesn't know what to do with them, you need to start Googling different Persian recipes. Because in Iranian cooking, they use herbs unlike we use them. When you read a recipe, commonly it says like 2 or 3 tablespoons of chopped fresh, you know, XYZ. In Persian cooking, it's cups. Like when I taught this class, I had a whole bunch of dill, 2 bunches of parsley, and a bunch of cilantro. And we used all 4 bunches in one meal that served 4 people. You can use so many more herbs than people think to add. Like, you should be showering your food with herbs. Tons of them. You shouldn't have leftovers. You're just not using enough. And that's usually what I prescribe. You can definitely store them, but if you feel like they're going limp and you're throwing them away, then you need to add more to your food.
Have you ever had a chance to meet Anissa Wahid from Tara Kitchen in Schenectady?
No.
You need to talk to her. She does Moroccan cooking in general, but her use of spices and things like that are off the charts. So someday you two have to meet, you know?
Yeah.
From 6 feet apart, anyway. All right. So what's your next cooking class going to be about?
What do we have coming up? We have a French bistro where we're doing roasted ratatouille. We're doing a vegetarian Indian workshop, a dumpling workshop, a shrimp and grits. One of my instructors, it's not just me. All of my teachers, all 4 of us, are in different homes, you know, self-isolating. And so we're all different. We're all teaching. So John's from South Carolina, and he's doing a shrimp and grits Sunday brunch. We're doing a bagel workshop where you can make bagels from scratch, and that's great because it's just flour and yeast if you can find them.
All right, tell me about this. We have 1 minute. To me, this is a mystery. You have flour and whatever, and then you freeze it? How do you make a bagel?
You mix flour, you mix yeast, water, some sort of sugar, like a teaspoon of sugar or honey to activate the yeast, and flour. And you make a dough, and you knead it and knead it and knead it, and you let it rest. And then you shape it into a loaf, or for this instance for bagels, you roll it out into a long, you know, rope, you know, attach the 2 sides so you have a round bagel. Boil it in water that's been, there's a certain pH to it, so there's like baking soda and honey, and you boil it for about 10 seconds.
Interesting.
Get that sheen on the outside, so when you bake it, they have that wonderful, like, sort of smooth, shiny surface. Not hard. It's so crazy how easy it is to make a bagel, but no one ever thinks to do it until all of a sudden the bagel shops are closed.
But when you boil it, now, I understand a boiled bagel is the proper way to do it.
Correct.
It has to be, the dough has to be very cold, though, right, before it goes in?
No, because, again, the bath is very, very short. You're just poaching it to sort of activate the yeast so it kind of plumps up in the water. But all you're trying to do is melt and sort of gelatinize the exterior part of the bagel. It's barely cooking through. And then you just put it on a baking sheet and then throw the whole thing in the oven.
Okay.
It's remarkable. And I think that one of the nice things about home cooking now that everything's closed and you shop less and the restaurants are closed, I've been making things that I usually eat out. One of them, tamales. I just made my first homemade Fig Newton, which were amazing.
Nice.
Like, you can make anything.
Well, we're out of time, Jennifer Claire. How do people find you on the web once again?
HomeCookingNY.com. I hope you guys will sign up for classes and join me. There's only 8 people per class, so it's pretty intimate and a fun way to spend the night.
It was so much fun having you here, and I look forward. You better still come at Thanksgiving time, all right?
I will. You know I'll be there. All right, I'll look forward to it.
All right, enjoy the rest of the lockdown. I think you'll be all right. Support comes from Rolling Rock Farm Salt and Seasoning, Sheffield, Massachusetts, specializing in black garlic and black garlic products with custom-made infused blends of sea salts and hot pepper blends, rollingrocksalt.com. At Pekarsky's, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, family-owned since 1948, offering sausages from kielbasa to Italian to bratwurst and smoked meats, home of New England farm-made sausage, open 7 days, Pekarsky's.com. Once again, big thanks to Jennifer Claire for being here. Thank you for listening, for the great emails, the great calls. Thanks to Zach Malloy. Charlene Knight took the calls. Our producer, the inimitable Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Have yourself a great weekend. Stay 6 feet or more apart from people. Put the mask on. It won't last forever. Right now, stand by for the best of our knowledge.